and to students. Claudia Sanchez, NPR News.
The Treasury Department has a new tax policy that will let companies write off more of the losses when they take over banks hit by the mortgage crisis. One estimate says it could save those firms up to $140 billion in taxes. Private tax experts say in some cases the tax breaks could exceed the cost of acquiring the banks, and they would come on top of the $700 billion government bailout. Some members of Congress were upset that such a sweeping tax change was issued with no public hearings or congressional input, but the Treasury Department says it was just trying to give guidance to firms involved in bank takeovers at a time when numerous financial institutions are struggling and their value can be difficult to determine. I'm Carl Castle, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from PBS, presenting Nova, Alien from Earth, debating the impact of the Hobbit bones on science, tonight at 8, 7 Central on PBS.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Bah Humbug Productions, presenting their second annual production of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol at Parkland College. Adaptation by Nick Schneider with original music by Tim Schirmer. Performances are December 5th through 21st. Ticket information and reservations at 351-2528.
Support for today's broadcast is provided by World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at 6th and University in Champaign. For over 15 years, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of cheeses, olive oil, balsamic vinegar, spices, chocolates, cookies, and more. Catering services are also available. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Sandy Mason's with us this morning. She stops by every month to talk about lawn and garden care. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And she's here to answer questions. As I said before the news, you know, maybe there you have some problem from this past growing season, you're not really quite sure what to do about, and you want to make sure that that doesn't come back, or you are already thinking about what you're going to plant next year, or maybe you're thinking, are there still some things that we can plant now? And the answer to that question is, well, yeah, there probably are some things we could still plant now. Certainly, you could still be doing bulbs, and maybe it's the last time to think about doing your fertilizing your lawn, and so we can talk about these things. If you have questions about houseplants, we will do that too. Whatever it has to do with things that grow around the home landscape, Sandy will do her best to help you out if you want to call in. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We also have a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call, use that number, and we will pay for the call. 800-222-9455. Any point, if you had questions, you give us a call. Glad to have you here.
Good morning.
Once again. Finally, I guess it's we're done. I had in my yard some begonias that were kind of near the house that were doing okay, hanging in. Some geraniums that were still looking really good until Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that finally was just, it was too much. We actually tied, I think I'm right about this, we actually tied the record low for the day. Early Monday
morning.
It was 19 out at the airport. So I think anything that was still hanging in, much it.
Which
done.
Actually was late. You know, we really had kind of late frost this year. You know, it was well into the end of October, where normally we could easily have had it really even the beginning of October. Yeah. So it kind of stretched out a little bit nicer. Yeah.
So finally now I think things are done. I was wondering, you know, are there a number of places around my yard there I have annuals planted, and I was just talking about this with my wife. Well, do you go out there and you just rip them up right now, or do you just let them hang in there? And she said, ask Sandy. And I said, Sandy's going to say, do whatever you want.
Yeah, I know. How much time do you have? Is the weather nice and you feel like getting out there and doing something, then rip them out. But and you're right. You know, a lot of them hang in there. I still had some petunias still blooming. So things hang in there, and I just like to see at least some blooms even later on in the season, so that's fine. But if people do have, obviously, if they're gone now, the plants are gone now, and so, you know, if you have the time and you want to go ahead and clean things up, that's great. You know, a lot of the perennials still look good even once they're dried. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly a purple coneflower, and a lot of them actually have really nice-looking seed heads. The wildlife, you know, liked them. I saw the birds the other day picking on the aster flowers, the old aster flowers that I had, you know, picking the seeds out of those. So, you know, it provides a little wildlife food. So for some of those things, and if you feel comfortable with that, just to leave a lot of those things until later and you feel like you want to do something later on.
Yeah. I guess it's better, you know, maybe some people would say, well, it's better to have something in that, right, something occupying that space at least, rather than have everything look so barren if you're cutting, if you're going to rip everything out and you're going to cut everything back right at this point.
Right. And, you know, unless you have mulch or something on there, we hate to see bare soil, you know, over the wintertime because we always have a concern about erosion and certainly from high winds that we often get in the wintertime. So it's always kind of nice to have something on there, certainly mulch or something along those lines. But with so many things still looking good, you know, ornamental grasses still look really good. You know, this time of year, they're kind of in their glory right now. So it's nice to leave those at least for a while. So there's lots of reasons. People always ask me those things, you know, should I cut it down now? Should I cut it down later with perennials? And as long as it, you know, dries down naturally, dies back naturally, and then all those food reserves are able to go back into the roots, then it's pretty much up to you on how you want it to look or how you want things to look.
Yeah, pretty much. I think now, well, maybe for a while now, I think people have been more, there's more and more interest in having some year-round interest,
right.
Having something
right.
that you right. can look at. And for those things that do, and there are some things that do dry down pretty nicely and do so, you know, they're kind of interesting and they occupy the space. And so people, I'm sure, are looking for more and more things that will do
right.
something for them
right.
that will have some architectural function, you know, in the garden right. that's going to be good year round.
And there are, and actually there is a plant, Calamium, which is actually a type of mint, but it's a ground cover and has either green and silver or something like that in the way of ground cover. And it's really pretty. And there's white Nancy and there's purple Nancy and there's a bunch of different names for those. But it's a little ground cover kind of plant. And I'm just amazed at how good it looks right now. It's a little bit, it's one of those things that it's kind of, you know, it certainly can expand itself. But usually what I do is just go ahead and trim it off and sort of make this kind of nice border. But it's still got some blooms on it. So there are certainly some perennials that are just fine with this cold weather. And actually, this particular plant, the Lamium, will still look good, you know, well into December. So it's there are those plants out there, certainly flowering kale. I still have a lot of my violas and pansies are still blooming right now. So there's no reason why you can't have those plants sort of later on in the season.
Yeah, okay. We have a caller here. Let's talk with them in Cutler, Indiana, on our toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, hi, Sandy. I wonder if you could make just some general comments about when the best time to do some transplanting of ornamental grasses or shrubs and small trees now versus in the spring.
Right. Okay, good. Well, actually, that's a good question, especially when sometimes we have some halfway decent weather in November and into December. Probably the woody type plants, I would have no problem, you know, transplanting those or moving those through November. So shrubs and trees, that's fine if you want to go ahead and move those. This time of year, that's great. I'd be a little bit more reluctant on things like the perennials. And certainly ornamental grasses. A lot of those guys in particular have a hard time with really wet soils in the wintertime. And when we move them, you know, even this time of year and they're under a certain amount of stress, we've cut the roots, they're more apt for the roots to rot. And so I'm real reluctant to do that this time of year. So probably for those kind of plants, perennials, certainly ornamental grasses, I'd wait at least until April. Ornamental grasses, most of those are warm season grasses that we have, the ornamental ones. So generally, for those, we're actually looking at the 1st of May. So you really kind of want them to be on their way, you know, you want to do it like right before their initial growth.
Okay.
So that would be true of even things like, I would say, of even things like rhubarb and asparagus and those things. We want to move them when they don't have a whole lot of time to sort of sit there and sulk. We want them to get going quickly. So that's why we like to do those in the springtime.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure.
All right, thank you. Well, other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You were just talking about things that really will, perennials that will really hang in. And I was thinking about, we have in our yard, we have a couple of relatively small Lenten rows, although they're
sure.
starting to get established. And that is also a nice plant for that reason. It's very tough. It seems almost to be green. Almost there. In fact, I guess there are some that actually are evergreen, that stay green
Absolutely.
All through the winter. And they flower early, and they're really nice plants. Are there other things that are kind of like this, that have similar sorts of habits that will really hang through the winter?
That even have evergreen, even the foliage and stuff. Well, you know, the they're also known as hellebores or the Lenten
right.
rows. So there's a bunch of those that are very nice in those shady spots. And you're absolutely right. Actually, mine look probably better now than they did all summer. They're really kind of really doing well with the new growth. And also even like coral bells, the heucheras and stuff.
Oh,
many
uh-huh.
of those actually look
uh-huh.
very nice and will tolerate cold weather and actually take on even a little different color to them. Kind of a more maroony kind of purple tinge to the foliage. foliage, so they look very nice during that time of year as well. So those are nice. There's another actually kind of a little ground cover plant called leadwort, which is kind of a weird name, but it actually is another one that takes on kind of a little kind of purplish cast of the foliage. Almost evergreen kind of thing. The European ginger is another ground. We're talking about a lot of ground cover things, but those actually those ones are do quite well, and it's nice to have those. But the European ginger is another one of those that almost has a evergreen kind of look to it, but it will take on those purple casts. Even bugleweed is another one, a juga or bugleweed that people know. That's another one that will kind of hang in there and really look pretty good well until December. Now, once we start getting in January and really super cold weather, a lot of these guys kind of take a dive but don't look quite so good. But so there's certainly a number of those, and just sort of adding those here and there. Those are many of those are actually ones that do very well with bulbs, with spring flowering bulbs. So those would be a nice combo. Maybe you decided to go ahead and plant some bulbs, and you can certainly do that. We'd probably rather do that maybe in October or so, but it's not too late to go ahead and plant bulbs if you have them or want to go ahead and put some more out there. And you know, that's one of those things that doesn't take a whole lot of time to do, and you sort of forget about them, and then when spring comes, you think, oh wow, look at that. So yeah. It's you know, it's kind of that little gift that you gave yourself last fall.
I know a lot of folks that we get that question a lot, and some people say, look, as long as I can go out there, if I can dig the
dirt,
if I
right.
can make a yeah. hole, I would put bulbs in there. And I suppose, especially if you have some, you might as well go ahead and put them in the ground.
Yeah, I certainly had a gentleman, I may have related the story in the past, but I had a gentleman call one time, and he actually, the ground was so frozen, he used a drill, one of the drill augers, and drilled right into the soil, you know, planted his tulips, and then he called me in the spring and said they looked great. So it wouldn't be something we'd recommend, but, you know, because you really like to get them somewhat established, because they will send out roots in the fall, which is really what we want them to do. So it wouldn't be something we'd recommend. But it's better just to go ahead and plant them rather than trying to save them over the winter, because most of us just don't have the proper conditions where we need to keep them cool. And we just don't have the proper conditions to do that unless you're going to stick them in the refrigerator or something.
Yeah. So. All right. Caller in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi, Sandy. I have a really nice hibiscus, and I've had it for – excuse me, I have to turn off my phone. I've had it for two seasons. I bring it in the winter. The stems are about 2 to 3 feet tall now, and I was wondering if I should trim them back. Mm-hmm. However, there are buds on the tops of the branches, and so I'm not sure if I should trim them back or not.
So do you have a sunroom or
yes.
extra light? Or so you have a sunroom, so they're getting plenty
yes.
of light.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you certainly could go ahead. Usually they will, you know, maybe send out a few flowers. They usually don't do a whole heck of a lot of flowering in the wintertime just because the light levels are so low. So you could certainly, if you know, we want to wait and enjoy those flowers that are put on and then do some trimming. We'd probably, unless you really have a lot of light, and maybe you certainly do in a sunroom area, we'd probably, for to do any dramatic pruning, we'd probably rather wait until like February or something. It's still that same kind okay. of thing where we might trim them back when we know that they're going to then put on a good flush of growth because we're getting more light at that point.
Oh, so, yeah, good idea. Yeah, I don't get tremendous light. I have a lot yeah. of windows, but it's not really a sunroom.
Yeah, you know, it's tough. It's tough because, you know, in Illinois, a sunroom in November is not very sunny.
No. Outside either.
Yeah, outside. Yeah, either way. So it's...
Yeah. When I do cut it back in spring, about how far would I cut it back?
You can do some pretty dramatic pruning. I probably wouldn't go much past anything that's maybe pencil size. You know, if as long okay. as it's about pencil size, you can do some pretty dramatic pruning on them. You start getting much more into that other wood. They'll probably still, I think it's a little riskier on how well they're going to bud out for you once you get past that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Thank you. And let's see. We have someone else here in Champaign, line number two. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I got brave and planted many, many tulip bulbs. I'm wondering what I can do to protect them from the rabbits.
Wow, good question. So you've gotten through, you've already planted them this year, and you got through squirrel season, so that's good, right?
Right.
Squirrels didn't get them, so that's a good sign. You know, it's one of those things that you can, there certainly are some repellents out there that you may want to try, and you might want to do that just very early in the season. Once you know, once they're starting to even pop through the ground in the spring, the leaves, I would go ahead and spray them. And there's a couple of different products. I've actually had pretty good luck with Liquid Fence. I don't know if you're familiar with that particular product.
You said Liquid Fence?
It's called Liquid Fence.
S-E-N-T-S?
Fence.
Fence, like, as in fence, as in rabbit fencing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry,
fence.
I'm not saying fence. That very well.
Okay.
Fence. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah. And it. So it's something, and you use it according to label directions. You actually sort of put it around the area, and then also spray them. So you're truly trying to make a liquid fence out of it. And it has a taste deterrent as well as a odor deterrent. And that is, and there certainly have other products out there. I think Deer Busters makes another product that's very similar. There are certainly other rabbit repellents. Some of them have a fungicide in them called Fyram. Those tend to be fairly effective. So repellents are actually pretty good, but I do it very early when they're first, you know, don't even let them think about getting near them. Because once they get started, unfortunately, some of those repellents don't work all that terribly well once they kind of get started. So I would use those very early in the season, and then usually you do have to reapply it, you know, every week or so, or if we have a lot of heavy rain, you have to reapply it. So you might try that. Then one of the best ways is to use, you know, true fencing, like poultry wire or poultry fencing and stuff, to really keep them out.
I've actually had rabbit fencing in part of the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I need to go through and put spikes because they found ways in.
Oh, through the rabbit fencing?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I've actually watched rabbits do this, and I was just amazed that I also bought the rabbit fencing. It's called rabbit fencing, and it's very narrow at the bottom. Maybe this is the same kind you have.
Yes.
Where the wires are very close together at the bottom and then farther apart at the top.
That's correct.
And I watched them. They actually climbed up and then went through the top part that was farther apart. I was amazed. I was truly amazed. So the rabbit fencing that's sold as rabbit fencing, I would not call it rabbit fencing because it doesn't seem to be all that terribly effective. So you really have to think of something. It is maybe 3 foot or so, or something that has that narrow wires and not the really big wires, even high up. So I was very surprised. So poultry netting works pretty well, certainly hardware cloth, some of those heavier gauge wires, but something that's really close together. Because you will have problems also sometimes with even voles and some of the other critters, and obviously they can get through a much smaller size. So that's why I kind of like some of the smaller size fencing. So you may just want to kind of gauge how things are going for you. Try that maybe the liquid products and see how well those work for you, but then really watch them, and then you may have to use something a little bit more durable than that.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Good luck. Right, you'll enjoy it. It'll be beautiful.
Thank you.
All right. Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and monthly on a Tuesday she's here and we talk about things that grow on the home landscape. So if you got problems, questions, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Someone on a cell phone here in Champaign next, and that's line one. Hello.
Hello, hi. Thank you, David, for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say I really enjoy your program. Thank you.
Thank you.
And the question is, I have a rubber plant. I don't know if that's the real name for it. It's got really thick, big leaves.
Do you
know what I'm talking about? It's called a rubber plant.
Oh, a rubber plant? Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So, it's gotten pretty big, and the leaves are they're just gnarly. They curl on themselves, and it's got from the base 3 branches, and it's not really thick or anything. It's just big. I don't know what to do with it.
So you have this. This is in your home.
Yeah.
Okay. And you've had it in that same pot for a number of years, or?
I have, yes.
Yeah.
And I've done nothing to it.
Yeah. You may want, especially if it's been there for a number of years, you may want to think about transplanting it.
Okay.
Because especially if it was in the original pot that you purchased it in, often those are quite fairly small, and then especially as the plant gets bigger. So it sounds like maybe there's just some issues there, or maybe just because of the pot being particularly small, the soil being really kind of used up, just so to speak, that it really needs to be.
Can I trim it back any it's just long, and it's not thick and
right.
Pretty. It's just kind of wiry looking.
Yeah, unfortunately with those rubber plants, they tend to kind of do that where they're kind of end up with these long stalks with a few leaves at the top. And you can trim those back. What you will find, they don't necessarily how do I explain it? They don't necessarily branch out a whole bunch of spaces at the bottom. What will happen is when you cut it off, you'll generally get another branch at that same spot where you cut it off and maybe one right below it, but that's it. So they don't bush up, I guess is what I'm trying to explain.
Okay.
You know, like you might think of with, a rose or something like that where you'd really trim it back and then it sort of bushes out. They just never really do that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I hope that helps. Again, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And I think we're getting somebody else lined up here, and that is in Gardner, Illinois, line number two right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
We have a problem with strawberries. They bloom. The plant looks great, and they got little berries on them, and then they just aborted everything.
Hmm.
I didn't know if there's something fungus or... Now, the apple trees did the same thing.
This
year?
They
had all kinds of blooms, but we got no apples.
Wow. And this was actually a great apple year, which I know you don't want to hear, since that's not what you had.
I don't know what happened. That's why I thought I could call and had some idea.
Well, as far as your strawberries, so they did go ahead and form. So you did get strawberries.
There was a little berry, just maybe a quarter inch, and then it just like they dried up.
Okay. Well, it could be a couple...
Yeah,
did you have them, covered for the winter, the strawberries?
No, we had covered them. We've had the patch for 20 years.
Oh,
and,
okay.
I mean, it's an old patch. But
right.
You tear up half of them every third year and come back.
Right. Well, a couple of things. Especially if you've had a patch for a number of years, sometimes they can get viruses in there that will cause that. And I think especially...
Oh, yeah.
If it's a patch you had for a number of years, you may end up with some virus issues there where they just never quite form. I also wonder, generally we do, if we do have a late frost or something, you can get, problems with the flower where either the whole flower dies or part of the flower dies, and so you get this sort of deformed fruit or they just never quite do anything. So certainly some issues there if we have late frosts. And they can get, especially if the patches, although it sounds like you're managing the patch, if it's really thick, you can get some mold issues that will kill off those flowers as well, or even the new fruit as it's forming.
The plant itself, looks extremely good.
Right.
But it's just, this happened, it's 2 years in a row it's happened. That's why.
That's why I'm really wondering. And we really, now last year we did have some issues with, a late freeze. We really had that horrible freeze very late, and so a lot of especially the early flowers died. This year, I would have thought it would have been a pretty good year for it. Now, do you ever notice any, gray mold or anything growing off the fruit? Once it starts to die, do you get this kind of moldy-looking stuff growing on it?
Not really.
Not really? Yeah.
Now, this is on a farm, and there's lightning being sprayed 200 feet from it, and Roundup's being sprayed 150 feet from it. Would those chemicals have anything to do with... aborting the flowers?
Well, if it was truly getting some drift issues, you'd be seeing it on the foliage, too.
Yeah, no, the foliage looks great. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, and if the foliage looks good, then I really doubt that it's a drift issue. I think there's something else going on besides that. So it might be one of those things that, if you want to try it again, you might really think about it, because that's a long time to have a strawberry crop, to be honest with you. Usually, if you get 10 years...
We sprayed it all with Roundup. I mean, we're going to start with new plants? Or?
I really think that's probably going to be your best bet, is to start out with new plants, because it really... Pardon?
Move it to another place?
That would be even better if you can move it to another spot, because that's a long time. And those particular plants, they can have some real issues with some root problems. They have lots of issues that can contain themselves within those soils. So I'd really think if you can move it to another spot, try some new varieties, those kind of things, I think you'll be...
We moved that same variety last year 100 feet and put it, but it did the same thing.
That's what makes me think there's something going on with those particular plants, either with a virus or something going on. So I really think you'd be better off just starting out with new ones. But you got a nice long seed. I mean, that's a lot of years to get a strawberry plants, to be honest with you. Yeah, that's, if you got 10 years out of a strawberry patch, I'd be happy. So you're really doing very well.
Tear them up like every third year,
Right.
And let them regrow again.
Right, which is good. So you're doing some good things.
You got any idea about
ideas on the apples? I don't know. We had really good, the only thing is, are you getting, we certainly have our issues with bees these days where we're not getting the pollinators that we needed before. Did you see bee activity? Did you actually have flowers?
There was flowers, and there was a little apple, and then after that, it just, they aborted them.
They just fall off. completely.
They were gone. Yeah, imagine they fell off.
And did you spray? Were those sprayed at all?
No,
or
nothing was sprayed.
Nothing was sprayed. Do you normally prune them every year? Or?
No, I'm kind of weak. They need pruning quite badly right now.
About every five years,
we prune them. I mean,
right. Because the problem with apples, especially, they'll get into this, especially if they aren't pruned on a regular basis, they'll get into this biennial bearing where they'll only, you know, every 2 years you'll get a halfway decent crop. But they really are one of those crops. Apples just really need a lot of pruning to keep them productive and to keep them, because you will get some natural drop in June where just some of the small apples will fall off, but all of them shouldn't be falling off in June.
Right. It ain't unusual to see half of them drop off, but usually the other half just gets bigger. I mean, you still have way more apples.
Right. So for those, you may really want to think about a good, you know, really get into some good pruning. I wouldn't do, you know, you may want to think of stretch that out over a 3 year period if you want to get those productive again. But I really think you probably need to think about pruning those and getting them productive.
What about fertilizing apple trees? Does a person need to put something down? Or?
You really don't need to be honest with you, and you really don't want to do a lot of fertilization because you can actually end up with some disease problems if they're really growing really crazy growth. So I'm not sure that's your issue. I really think it's probably going to be a pruning. So
Okay,
good luck.
Thank
Get
you.
Out, sharpen Thanks your saw call. And go for it.
All right, again, our guest is Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month on a Tuesday. We talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow on the home landscape. Houseplants, we could do that too. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455 to somebody on a cell phone, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I've been having a problem with coneflowers, and I think coneflowers ought to be grown by anybody, but for some reason, the coneflowers, I plant them, and then something eats them, and I thought that it was rabbits. So finally, and this is like a couple of years I've been fighting with this, so a month or so ago, I bought some new coneflowers, some big ones, and put them in the same place, put fencing around it. So, and then something started eating holes in the leaf. So maybe it wasn't rabbits, but it seemed as if it was rabbits. I mean, because it was just eating the leaves like a rabbit might. Do you have any ideas?
And you never saw any critters on them at all?
I've never seen any critters, no.
Yeah.
A lot of rabbits.
Right. And the holes were just individual holes kind of here and there through the leaves or...
Yes, I thought almost like a slug makes.
Well, that's what I was wondering, if you weren't having slug problems, because usually when we don't see any, you know, it seems like there's holes appearing and we don't see anything. Often it's slugs, you know, because they're, of course, they don't like the sunlight, so they're kind of doing their thing. And by the time we get out there and look at them, they're nowhere to be seen unless you really do a lot of digging around. So I'd really wonder about slugs. It certainly was a year that we could certainly have had slugs because we didn't, you know, even though we had hot weather, we had some moisture, and so slugs actually did fairly well this last year.
Right.
So I do wonder about slugs.
Is there a solution for slugs? I fought with them in the past with hostas and things, but it's been a while since I've fought with slugs.
Right. There are some newer products out there now. I think one's called Sluggo. What a great name,
okay.
Sluggo. so there are some products out there that you may want to try. You certainly can, trap them. Even if you just put like a small board or something like that out there by them, they'll usually collect underneath them and underneath the board, and then you can sort of harvest them as you please underneath that. So you can try those kind of things. I don't know if you have dogs or kids around. Whenever you use any of these kind of bait type products, you always want to make sure that you have them in a container or something that the slugs can get in but the kids can't, kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but you may want to try that, and I have a feeling it's probably what's going on. I haven't seen too many things in the way of really caterpillars and stuff that necessarily eat coneflowers, so yeah. I think slugs would be a good bet.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right, thanks.
We had a couple of off-air questions, and I feel like I better get them in because I don't want to end up not getting an answer for these folks. And we had somebody who called in a little bit earlier and wanted to know about rolling and aerating the lawn and when was the best time to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, generally you could do it now. You certainly could. We generally always want to do, as far as aerating, you generally always want to do that when the grass is actively growing. We're probably getting a little bit later late in the season. I probably would have thought more about that in September or maybe October. So we're getting a little bit late here since you really want it to recuperate quickly. So at this point, unless you really felt like you had to, I'd probably wait until spring. As far as rolling, you know, we're not really big into rolling. You know, that was one of those things. I know my grandpa always, you know, he had to go out there and roll the lawn. But just to realize every time you roll it, you're compacting the soil, and that's not what we want. So generally, we'd never recommend rolling unless for specific things. Maybe you just reseeded the lawn and you want to roll it lightly just to get good seed-to-soil contact. That might be a good time to do that. If you have a particularly bumpy lawn, I would be more thinking about maybe doing a top dressing of soil or compost or something to sort of help even out those areas. That actually would be a much better technique than trying to do any kind of heavy rolling. So rolling is not really something we get into too much anymore. Right.
And if you had been thinking about doing a fall application of fertilizer, hadn't gotten around to it, you can still do it.
This is absolutely right. And usually we think about the holiday season when it comes to fertilization. And so Veterans Day is our time where we normally think that would be your last application for the year to do any kind of fertilization. And so that would be your winterizer type fertilizer that people often think. And so it's a good time to think about that kind of thing and actually maybe skip that really, really early application and in the spring and wait until May actually to do – wait until Mother's Day to do your application for spring.
And also somebody wanted to have you talk about squash bugs. What do you do to get rid of them?
Squash them.
No. Okay, let's move on to the next caller then.
I'm actually, squash bugs are tough because we don't really have a whole lot of insecticides that are very good. And so squash bugs, even though I'm being trying to be funny there, but there really is not, we don't have a lot of good insecticides for those. So unfortunately, we don't have good controls for those if you want to use an insecticide. But you can find those, actually, they lay a cluster of eggs underneath the leaves. And so often you can actually just literally squash the eggs. And so they're kind of dark brown, black eggs. And so you can go and squash the bugs or squash those eggs. And so just good scouting is good. And I know that sounds like a lot of work, and absolutely it is. You're right. But we just don't have a lot of good controls for those, unfortunately.
Okay, so physical control.
Physical,
the,
yeah,
the
you think you squash bug was just because they hit squash, but no.
No, that's what you
that's
do.
That's what squash bug.
All right. Then we'll just go on
a
here.
Bit of trivia.
There. We'll go to Monticello at line number 3 for another caller. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
I have a phlox bed that was attacked by powdery mildew this year,
mm-hmm.
and it's been a beautiful, beautiful showpiece of the phlox. And I read somewhere that 3% hydrogen peroxide sprayed on it would help curtail that, but it didn't. So I cut the flowers all down because they just kind of dried up. And then from the roots, they began to grow again. And they still have powdery mildew on mm-hmm. them. And I'm wondering, what can I do to ensure that next year that this won't happen? Or do I have to just get rid of the roots and start with new ones?
Right. Right. Yeah, powdery mildew is one of those things that, you know, as you know, it can be a serious problem on phlox, but also even Monarda, bee balm. So there's a few plants out there that we can almost guarantee they're going to get some powdery mildew issues. But there are some resistant varieties of both of those plants.
Okay.
So you may want to think, I don't know what color you had on your phlox, but there are some powdery mildew resistant phlox now. And so for the long haul, I'd say I'd really think about getting some of the new ones. One of the really pretty ones, I think that it's a white one, and it's called David. There you go. It's called David, and it's a very nice one, and it seems to be very good as far as not getting powdery mildew. And I guarantee you when you're buying, you know, if you're looking through, you know, information, I guarantee you they let you know that it's powdery mildew resistant because they know that's an issue. So you may want to think about some new ones. I will tell you some other products as far as if you're looking for something that's maybe more in the organic line. The baking soda actually is a pretty good product, and it's sold as Remedy. And I've had that to be pretty good, pretty effective on powdery mildew issues. But again, that's the whole problem you have. As soon as the leaves start to come up, you have to spray, and you have to do continual sprays to protect those leaves against infection. So it's a time commitment, obviously, and so you may or may not decide you want to do that. But if you truly wanted to keep the ones that you have now, that would probably be your best bet.
Well, what about the soil? Is the whatever it is that causes this, is it, would it be in the soil?
It's really with the leaves, you know, old leaves and stuff. So it's not so much a soil-borne problem. It's really with the old leaves. So cleaning up the patch is really good. But at powdery mildew, is one of those things. It's a fungus, and it's out there. It's all over the place. So you're not necessarily going to get rid of it, you know, by doing – and certainly not by doing anything with the soil. I would just clean up those old plants and get that old foliage out as much as you can. That's probably the big thing.
But if I just used regular household baking soda and put it in a, you know, dissolved it in some liquid and sprayed with that, it would work?
Well, I can't recommend that because it's not labeled to be used as a pesticide. So we recommend that you go with products that are labeled to be used as a pesticide. So that would be like the remedy product because it's been formulated to be used on plants.
All right. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Right, thanks. Well, I certainly in my yard have both those have Monarda and have some phlox, and they are old plants that they've been, certainly the Monarda has been there for a long time and have that problem. So This thing that you're talking about, what sort of a thing? Is that something that you then mix with water? Does it already come in a liquid formulation, the remedy?
Yeah, it's actually a powder formulation. Then you mix it with water and then spray it on.
And then you spray it on.
Yeah. And even though it's, and I know it's confusing because we think of, you know, we have baking soda in our, you know, on our shelves and, you know, why can't I just use that? But it truly is one of those things that once something's being used as a pesticide, then legally it has to be labeled to be used as a pesticide. And so that's why just pulling something off the shelf isn't really necessarily a good idea, because there's a lot of things that are different because we don't want to hurt the plants either. So, it, you know, like using, I know a lot of times people want to use dishwashing soap and stuff, but dishwashing soap can actually take off the wonderful coating that are on leaves to protect them. And so you actually can do damage by doing some things that you think are perfectly okay because it's something on the shelf. So we always recommend that you go with products that are labeled to be used as pesticides, and then you can read it according to label directions. You know how much to apply. You know how much to put in the water or whatever, however it's used. And then you have a proper labeling system. So I think that's the best route to go, even though I know sometimes it's a little bit confusing because it is something that's on the shelf. But the nice thing is it is a product, you know, it's fairly safe product. We're pretty familiar with baking soda type products. And
all right. And
so that's the good news. Remedy is how it's sold.
Mm-hmm. I'll try it. Let's talk with somebody in Piatt County, line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Yes.
Thanks so much for your help. I did want to ask, I have a hillside that pretty much has grown up in weeds, and I was wondering, because isn't there a landscape rose? I don't want a, you know, a fussy, you know, naturally not a tea rose or anything, but isn't there not a multiflora, something that can be used on hillsides, kind of a tough old rose?
So how tall do you want this to get or not get?
Well, I really don't care. I mean, I'm not using it. It's not like I look out over it or anything. I'm just thinking of it's on the road, and I would just like something there instead of weeds.
Sure, sure. There are a lot, like rugosa roses are probably one of the tougher ones that are out there. They'll certainly get tall, and that's why I was asking. The leaves will get 5-6 feet. Mm-hmm. But even a lot of the shrub-type roses that are called shrub roses, most of those are really pretty tough. I think a lot of people have liked the new knockout roses. I will tell you that pretty much all the roses to some extent will suffer a little bit of winter damage. Mm-hmm. So you may find in the springtime you have to do some trimming to really make them look nicer. But they're pretty tough overall. I've been real pleased with a lot of the shrub roses on how amazingly tough they are. Japanese beetles are certainly an issue.
Yeah.
So that would be one thing you might think about. You know, if you want to think about other plants, you might even think about, you know, I assume this is full sun.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, you might even think about daylilies. I don't know how you feel about daylilies, but daylilies do a pretty good job of sort of, you know, being pretty tough competitors and will take over a hillside fairly well, you know, given a chance. So you might think about those too.
Even the, like the hybrids, I mean, not just the old tiger ones.
Yeah, as far as the daylilies, I probably look for ones that maybe that list something as for a ground cover or something. Because some of the hybrids that I found they expand, but they don't expand quite as fast as maybe what you want them to. Mm-hmm. So you might look for some of those. I'm trying to think of some. The names are escaping me right now, but maybe I'll think of it before the end of the show. On some of the rebloomers, and some of those actually seem to be pretty tough and seem to grow pretty fast. So you might think about some of those and see if that doesn't work for you. Or even you could think about red twig dogwood. That's another one that you know, is a shrub, but mm-hmm. certainly does a pretty good job of filling in areas. Arrowwood viburnum, I would say, is probably another one that's pretty good at sort of filling in. These are shrubs again, but do a pretty good job and pretty tough.
Have you seen, this just reminds me, along the roadsides, like along Route 10, they have these really tall trees, and I don't want to say trees, but they're really tall and bushy and have really red fruit on them. Is that, it can't be a crab, I don't think. Is that like a viburnum?
They have red fruit on them on Route 10.
I mean, they've got red, looks like berries.
Like berries? Well, it could very well be a viburnum. I can't think of anything else. And they're not like crab apples, as you said. They're not a crab apple. It's more like a cluster of berries.
Yeah, they're a cluster, and the trees are so compact, or big, huge bushes, I guess, you know. I just see them along Route 10, and I was just wondering.
Yeah, I can't think, right offhand, I can't think of what else it would be that they might have planted along there that might have red berries other than viburnums.
Yeah, they just look so beautiful this time of year. Then another fast question. I have ended the year with some Roundup left over. It doesn't winter over, I presume.
As long as it doesn't freeze.
Okay.
Yeah, if you put it somewhere where it's not going to freeze, it'll be fine.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so
sure.
much for your help.
All
sure.
All right. Thank
Bye.
You for the call. We have certainly time for others if you have questions. We have about 10 minutes, maybe a little bit more, with Sandy. Sandy Mason is here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and on the show is here with us once a month on a Tuesday, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. You have a problem you're not quite sure what to do with. You need some advice. Maybe you're looking for a particular plant for a particular place. You have some houseplant questions. Any and all that is certainly welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. So is there something, I know that there's something you maybe would like to mention?
Yes, I would. And actually, since it's kind of raining today, this is a perfect day to talk about this. There actually is a national organization, and it's called Coco Ross, but I call them rain spotters because Coco Ross, I never quite remember. But it's a community collaborative rain, hail, and snow network. And it's volunteers, trained volunteers, that learn how to actually go ahead and report what rain they get and also snow. So the nice thing is, I don't know about you, but it just seems like it more and more that I might get rain, but, you know, two blocks down the road, they got nothing. So it really, the whole idea of the network is to get a better idea of, you know, maybe some rain patterns, who's getting what rain, how much, those kind of things, and just get a better idea of what kind of precipitation that's out there. And so we're going to be doing training on December 2nd, Tuesday, December 2nd at the Champaign County Extension Auditorium. It's at 7 o'clock in the evening. And you can learn how to be a rain spotter. There are kind of specific ways because they want everybody to sort of do it the same way. And it's really a great thing. And you can actually go on. If you can't make it to that December 2nd training, you actually go to the Coco Ross Network, to their website, and actually go through. They actually have some online training that you can do that and get involved in it. And actually, it's really a lot of fun to be a rain spotter, and you get a better idea of kind of what's going on in the area and really see. This is actually a collaboration between the Illinois State Water Survey as well as the National Weather Service. And it's a great, you know, it sounds like it's something, one of those things that gee whiz, but it really is an excellent thing that actually it's it's online and it's real time. You can actually go in, you can see who's got what rain at what time kind of thing. And it really is also good for not just the National Weather Service, but also even for folks that are having to worry about emergency preparation kinds of things. So to see who got how much rain and is this going to be a flooding issue, those kind of things. So it really has a lot of repercussions for it. So it's Tuesday, December 2nd. They can go to the our extension website. It's just webextension.uiuc.edu/Champaign and click on Rain Spotters. And you can sign up for the December 2nd program or certainly get into the Coco Ross program. So it's a lot of fun, very educational. It's a great way to see what's going on out there in the way of weather.
Okay, very good. We have some callers here. The lines are full, as a matter of fact, so we'll try to get everybody. Going first to Belgium on our toll-free line 4. Hello.
Hello. How are y'all today?
Good.
Pretty good.
I spoke to you before about an old peach that I have. It's called a Crawford peach. traditional heritage-type peach, very small. Well, I'm getting older, and those trees just keep getting taller and taller.
Mm-hmm.
So I've decided to espalade them. Now, I don't know anything about espalading. Can you do it with peach trees? I know they do it with apple trees.
Yeah, you certainly can do it with peach trees, and actually we have one at the Idea Garden on at Urbana on the campus that we've done with a peach. But I will tell you, normally it's done from day one, or pretty much from day one, well, maybe day two.
Well, these peaches were planted last fall.
Oh, okay.
So now they're about 3 feet tall. I thought it'd be a good time to start doing that.
Right. So you have them on, are you going to put on a, like a wire system or a trellis or something like that?
That's just it. I started them up growing because they started with just little seedlings who are only about 7 or 8 inches tall.
Okay.
And because I picked them up from underneath the other trees, and that's how I've gotten the trees. I've had these trees for 30 years now, on and off, different trees. And so I started them up, and I was going to put in some post and wires, you know. I wondered, do peaches do well on this sort of thing, or
as far as an espalier, you know, sure. There's no reason.
You say that espalier.
Espalier.
Okay.
I don't know. That's how I say it.
Okay.
I think it's French, and I'm not very good with French.
Well, I can barely speak English, so I understand.
So it's something like that. So I'm probably butchering it as well. But it's espalier. But it's just basically just having it on a single plane rather than we think about, you know, having these sort of three-dimensional types of trees. You know, you're on a single plane.
Yep.
But generally, you are going to need some kind of wiring system or trellis or something to give them extra support.
Yeah.
So you may want to think about that a little bit, depending on where you have it. Often, people put them next to walls or houses or whatever, buildings. And
well,
so that's kind of their...
That's what I was thinking. See, these are out in the middle of my yard. Not yard, it's where I keep my other trees. They're not against a wall. Do they have to be against a wall?
No, absolutely not. But they are going to need some kind of wiring, because normally what you're going to do is, in order to get them, depending on what pattern you're going to try to do, but normally you actually tie them to the wires.
Yeah.
And that's how you get them. You sort of force them into these different shapes and stuff by tying them onto wires. So you need some kind of support system. Plus the fact that because of that sort of single plane, they're going to be, you know, fairly susceptible to wind and those kind of things. So you have to give them a little extra support for that reason, too.
Well, I'm in a fortunate area. I'm down in a little bit of a valley, so wind's not going to be a problem. And can you trim? You trim them? You have to keep them trimmed to make sure they produce, you know. I don't want them to get very tall. That's the whole thing behind this.
Right.
So I can do it from the ground.
Right. And it is one of the things with espaliers. They are, I'd put them on the high maintenance end of life, because you do have to prune them on a regular basis, even throughout the whole season. As they're growing, you're going to be pruning them and training them and those kind of things. So throughout the whole season. So it's not a low maintenance proposition by any means. It certainly can be done, but you're just going to have to do it like every few weeks as they put on new growth. You're going to have to be doing some trimming and some tying and those kind of things.
I see.
So, yeah. So, but it's, you know, it's one of those things. It's a lot of fun. It looks great and those kind of things. So it certainly can be done.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye.
So how do you,
how do you spell
this? This
Espallier, I think.
Oh,
how do you say that? Yeah. Can you say Spanish?
Well, I guess I would say espalier.
Espalier? Okay.
Why?
See,
but,
I don't
you know,
know
this
these
is
things.
Not my, you know, that's not
know,
my language.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, this is the first time hearing about this.
Really? Need to look this up. And actually, it's quite beautiful. As I said, we're doing it at the Idea Garden in Urbana on the side of our shed. And it's just kind of a fun thing. It absolutely is a high-maintenance kind of thing. If you ever make it to Allerton Park, they actually have done quite a nice job in their walled garden where they have espaliered pears, or espaliered pears, and really quite beautiful once they're done. But it's and you can do all kinds of fancy patterns and all kinds of things.
It's a horticultural technique of training trees through pruning and grafting in order to create formal two-dimensional or single-plane patterns by the branches of the tree. This technique was popular in the Middle Ages in Europe to produce fruit inside the walls of a typical castle courtyard without interfering with the open space and to decorate solid walls by such trees planted near them.
I was going to say that. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you to Wikipedia, the source of all knowledge. All right. In the time that we have left here, I'll stop fooling around, try to get some more callers, and talk next with somebody in St. Joe, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
We're trying to get our schoolyard to go more green, and we've got probably several acres, 2 to 4 acres, of multiple rows of tree line around the perimeter. And so my first question is, what I read is, to avoid compressing the ground around the drip line of the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they mow with a big mower,
mm-hmm.
and they roll with a very heavy roller. And I don't think we ought to be rolling any of this.
Mm.
And what happens if you let turf grass just grow around these trees? I mean, people don't go out there and play or walk. Or would we have to plow and try and plant some ground cover around the several acres of trees or what?
Yeah, you really can. I guess one thing, you know, I assume they've mulched or have some mulch around the trees. That'd be healthier for the trees.
There were at first.
At one time.
Yeah.
So they may want to really think about remulching those areas, especially the areas where the grass isn't growing very well. There's no reason why you can't just stop mowing the grass. And if you notice in some areas, and I've noticed even some parkland areas, and I noticed at certainly the forest preserves and some of those certain areas where they used to mow all the time, they've just stopped mowing them. And that's fine. I mean, there's no reason why you can't do that. Probably you'd want to periodically mow just to keep down any, you know, woody stuff that might come in, like honeysuckle or some of those things that are mulberries and those kind of things that like to come into those kind of areas. So they may want to periodically mow just sort of clean it up, but there's no reason, just from a grass's point of view, not to just let it grow, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, nor the trees.
And for the trees, is that what you said?
It's okay to just let the grass grow for these trees, too.
And it's fine. It's probably from, if they're young tree, I don't know, how are these fairly mature trees or young?
We plant every year, so there's okay. Everything from evergreens 2 or 3 feet tall to trees 8, 9 feet tall.
Right.
Probably, the whole thing's less than 5 years old.
Okay. So probably for young trees, we'd rather have mulch around them because grass is a pretty heavy competitor with young trees.
Yes.
And so you'll get better growth from your trees if you mulch around them. So certainly within the drip line of the tree, so where the leaves are, if they can get that mulch, not a real heavy mulch, just 3 inches or so, don't put it right around, next to the trunk, that's wonderful. And so you'll get good growth out of the trees. Probably if you have evergreens, I wouldn't let the grass get really tall right next to the tree, because if the branches get really shaded, you'll tend to lose those lower branches faster.
Okay.
So that would be the one thing.
What about rolling the general playground with this real heavy roller they use?
I don't know why you'd want to roll, to be honest with you, because it just compacts the soil, and that's not what the grass wants. If there's truly issues, as in it's really lumpy, bumpy kind of soil area, then it's time to come in with and just do a top dress. They could easily do maybe an inch. I wouldn't do much more than an inch in certain areas and just top dress it and let the grass grow up through it. And that's a much better technique. You can top dress with soil, even with compost, and it's a much better technique than trying to roll it to get the lumps out. So if they're doing it strictly for lumpiness, then I'd say they need to look at something else.
Okay, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
And I think we're pretty much going to have to finish. I'm sorry we have a couple of people that we can't take. In the meantime, if you're here in and around Champaign-Urbana, you can certainly get with Sandy at her office.
You
can call her, ask questions. You can stop by. You can also tune in to a program that we have here on WILL-TV, a show called Illinois Gardener. That's on Thursday nights at 7. Diane Nolan is customarily the host. I think actually last time we talked, you were going to host.
I was the substitute.
Did that go okay?
I do that.
Did that go okay?
I think so. I don't know. Maybe you need to ask people to watch. I think it went okay.
Okay. Thursday nights, WILL-TV at 7. It's a live show, and we have a rotating cast of folks who come in as cast of characters who are there as expert witnesses. So you can actually call in and ask questions on that show as well. And Sandy, next month, we'll be back, and we'll do this again.
And they can check with their local extension office. I mean, all the counties, just look under your county name, and you'll find an extension office, whether you're in Indiana or wherever you are, you can just look for your local extension office.
All right. Sandy Mason is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month. We do this program. Thanks.
It's fun.
Programming on AM 580 made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at tnol.com. Support for the show also comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Tastings, wine tastings every Saturday from 2 to 6, beer and spirit tastings Sundays 3 to 5. Information at thecorkscrew.com. We'll break for an update on the markets. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets as my computer slowly cranks back into turning itself on. And there we are. Let's go ahead and look right at the prices in Kansas City. December wheat now at 556, down 7. The March at 571 and a quarter, down 7 and a half. At the Chicago Board of Trade, December wheat at 512 and three quarters, down 7 and a quarter. March, 533 and three quarters, down 7. May, 549, down 6 and a quarter. July, 561 and three quarters, down 8. December corn, 367 and a quarter, down 16 and a quarter. March, 385 and a quarter, down 16 and a quarter. May, 398 and a half, down 15 and a quarter. July, 409, down 16 and a quarter. September, 416 and three quarters, down 19 and a quarter. December,